Thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. What the Supreme Court's recent decision means for racial profiling and future immigration raids.
The Mexican community is going to reaffirm its presence here in the city of Chicago.
And a look at how organizers are preparing for this weekend's Mexican Independence Day events amid concerns over ramped up ICE raids. First off tonight, law enforcement is seeking the public's help in identifying a person of interest in the fatal shooting of conservative activist Charlie Kirk as the shooter remains at large. The FBI today released these images of the person they're looking to identify and are offering a $100,000 reward for information. Two people were previously detained on Wednesday but were released. Authorities say they've recovered a rifle and believe the suspect appeared to be of college age and blended in on the university campus in Utah where the shooting happened. Elected officials, meanwhile, have been calling out the rise in political violence.
In 20 years leading up to 2015, we had two incidents of political violence against elected officials. In the 10 years since, we've had 25. The numbers tell the story. It is much more dangerous than it used to be.
President Donald Trump today said that he would be awarding Kirk a Presidential Medal of Freedom. Some of the people convicted on an arrest from disgraced former police sergeant Ronald Watts could be receiving part of a $90 million settlement from the city. The city's law department announced the proposed settlement, which would resolve 176 lawsuits tied to Watts.
This is a legacy case of a magnitude unlike anything I had previously seen. It is the largest number we've had and remains the largest number associated with a particular police officer. When solved for, this case will represent 64% of all reverse conviction cases within our portfolio.
Watts and the officers who reported to him had been accused of demanding money from residents and drug dealers as payment for protection. They arrested those who refused after planting drugs on them. Watts served 2 years in prison for shaking down a drug courier who turned out to be an FBI informant. City Council's Finance Committee is expected to consider the proposal on Monday. Immigrant rights leaders are coming together to denounce the Trump administration's ratcheting up of ICE efforts in Chicago. While the president seems to have backed off on his threats to deploy National Guard troops, Operation Midway Blitz, the increase in immigration efforts, is still underway.
And it's not about criminals. It's about our neighbors. It's about the residents that we love, hardworking people that are getting, unfortunately, taken from our community. And as we jump into Hispanic Heritage Month, remember, that is what they are attacking. They aren't attacking the criminals. They're attacking the beauty, the history of what we are, and the history that has still been unwritten.
Officials are asking residents to dial the Family Support Network hotline if they spot ICE or witness someone being taken. And we'll have more on the Mexican Independence Day celebrations happening this weekend later in the program. The Chicago Fire Department paused today to remember those who died 24 years ago on 9/11. Mayor Brandon Johnson joined members of Engine 42 in River North to honor the 343 members of the New York City Fire Department who lost their lives during the terrorist attack on the Twin Towers. The commemoration began with a moment of silence. And sad news for Chicago's broadcasting community and especially us here at WTTW. Bruce Dumont, who created Chicago Tonight with John Calaway in 1984 and was the program's first producer and later political correspondent, has died. Dumont was the longtime host of the radio program Beyond the Beltway and also spent time working at other Chicago media outlets, including WGN Radio and CBS2. One of his passions was broadcast history, and he was the creator and founder of Chicago's Museum of Broadcast Communications. You can read more about Bruce Dumont on our website. He was 81 years old. Up next, the Supreme Court allows federal agents in L.A. to stop and question people based on certain factors, including their ethnicity, right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family. the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
A Supreme Court ruling this week leaves open the possibility that ICE agents can use ethnicity, among other factors, when making immigration sweeps. Justices struck down a lower court order that had temporarily barred federal agents in Los Angeles from questioning people based solely on ethnicity and work status. The ruling coincides with the Department of Homeland Security's announcement of Operation Midway Blitz, which is expected to ramp up ICE's presence in Chicago. Joining us now to discuss how the ruling could impact ICE operations in the city are Kevin Fee, legal director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois, and Jessica Estrada, director of policy and strategy at Communities United, a Chicago-based racial justice organization that's worked to address racial profiling by the Chicago Police Department through litigation and community organizing. Thanks to you both for joining us. So, Kevin, let's start with you, please. What is your reaction to the Supreme Court's decision this week?
Look, there's no doubt that this is a disappointing ruling for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is that it's issued on an issue of tremendous importance that it impacts millions of people, and yet it's done in sort of an emergency basis through the shadow docket in a way where the court didn't fully explain its reasoning. That being said, I do want to avoid overstating the impact of this temporary ruling, and it is just that, a temporary ruling. It's not a ruling on the merits. It's not a ruling that determines which side wins and which side loses. It's a temporary ruling, and it certainly does not make racial profiling legal. Racial profiling remains illegal and unconstitutional, full stop, even after this ruling this week.
Okay. Jessica, do the folks that you work with here, do they have an understanding of what's going on with the court case, what's happening in L.A., and the impact that it could have on immigrants in this community?
Yeah, our communities there, this has caused a trauma, fear to go out, but our young people and our leaders, they're leading some advocacy work and mobilizing to teach, to educate others around know your rights. Like, what happens if you get stopped by the police? What happens if a federal agent stops you? And so, yeah, the young people and our leaders, they're advocating and they're educating our communities.
So in his concurring statement with the decision, Justice Kavanaugh, he wrote the following, quote, "To be clear, apparent ethnicity alone cannot furnish reasonable suspicion. Under this court's case law regarding immigration stops, however, it can be a relevant factor when considered along with other salient factors, some of those factors including accent or English ability, English speaking ability, place of work and location." Kevin, are ICE agents, are ICE agents racial profiling when all of these other factors are taken into account along with ethnicity?
Well, unfortunately, as you saw from that quote, it's not clear which combination of factors is enough in any individual instance. It's sort of a broad statement that ethnicity along with some group of other factors may, in certain cases, be sufficient to constitute reasonable suspicion. But in any individual case, if an individual is stopped based on their race alone, as even Justice Kavanaugh stated in that quote, that is illegal and unconstitutional. That person can still challenge that detention in court. Lawyers throughout the city stand, ready and willing to help them do that.
How difficult is that to prove that I was racially profiled?
Well, it depends on the facts on the ground. It can be difficult to prove at times, but where you have these indiscriminate roundups of large groups of people, citizens and non-citizens alike, where there's no apparent linkage between them other than the color of their skin, it's oftentimes not as difficult to prove as it might sound. And, based on witness testimony, facts on the ground gathered by lawyers, it can often be shown that, in fact, race was the motivating factor. And in those cases, that stop is unconstitutional.
Jessica, have any, what kind of fears are being expressed by community members? What are you hearing? Has anyone expressed hesitancy to maybe go out? Suppose they are day laborers looking for work outside of the Home Depot. What are you hearing?
What we're hearing is like parents are afraid to take their children to school. Students are afraid and can't focus in school because they're afraid that probably they might not see their parents when they come home from work. But also our community members, they're ready. Like they have been mobilizing. They inform the community, like if you see something, record it and report it. Same as like similar to what Kevin said, like we need to prove this, like this is happening to our communities, the racial profiling that is happening. And yeah, like that's that's what we're hearing.
Yeah, that's what you're hearing. Okay, so Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, he spoke to reporters about the ruling on Monday and pushed back on the notion that ICE agents were randomly picking up individuals.
I trust the professionals of the Border Patrol and ICE, all very well trained, to make sure they establish reasonable suspicion to briefly detain and question somebody, and the Supreme Court agreed with me.
Kevin, what's your reaction to Homan's argument that, you know, that ICE agents are researching individuals before picking them up?
Well, if you look at the underlying facts in the record in the Vasquez-Perdomo case out in Los Angeles, you'll see that in many cases, that's simply not the case. I mean, there are, you know, citizens, documented immigrants being swept up in these raids, being slammed to the ground, slammed to fences, pulled away from work for extended periods of time, subjected to interrogations when they've done absolutely nothing wrong. So there's really no question, based on the sworn testimony in these cases, that folks are getting swept up in these raids when they shouldn't be. And so, you know, to suggest that we merely need to sort of take ICE's word for it, I think really belies the record in these cases.
Jessica, a lot of community organizations like yours, even the city, has started sort of a Know Your Rights campaign, making sure that folks know their rights, obviously, yeah, and know how to respond if they find themselves in a situation. What are the rights that they need to know that they have?
Let's say if they get stopped by the federal agent or police, like, do not run. And just like ask for an attorney. Like we have a right to ask for an attorney, and yeah, like if you're an outsider, just like seeing like ICE agents or police officers, like just to record it and to report it.
You have the right to record it if it's outside on a sidewalk. Yeah, it's not private.
Yeah, exactly. And we need to show that in Chicago, like we keep our families safe. And that's what we have been doing. Not only our organization, there's like a lot of organizations, a lot of neighbors that are protecting each other. They're making like noise if they see like ICE agents and recording. And yeah, that's the beauty of Chicago. It's the unity and how we take care of each other.
So in her dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, she wrote, quote, "We should not have to live in a country where the government can seize anyone who looks Latino, speaks Spanish, and appears to work a low-wage job. Rather than stand idly by while our constitutional freedoms are lost, I dissent." Kevin, this ruling was issued as part of the Supreme Court's emergency or shadow docket, where they didn't really have to write anything. But as we discussed, Justice Kavanaugh wrote something and Justice Sotomayor wrote a response. Can you describe like a little bit about the shadow docket and why you think the Supreme Court is opting to use it in this case, and maybe so much? They've been using it a lot more than previously.
Well, when most folks think about, you know, Supreme Court opinions, they think about final opinions. You know, the opinions that are issued after full briefing and, you know, a well-publicized argument before the court that are supported by the, you know, a lengthy opinion, oftentimes a lengthy dissent, setting forth the full reasoning of the court, right? The emergency, the so-called emergency docket, sometimes called the shadow docket, is really it's these interim rulings on, you know, sort of interim steps in the middle of a case that have been issued with increasing frequency by this court with little to no real reasoning behind them. Just a simple ruling one way or the other, often having tremendous impact on broad groups of people, this being a perfect example. and yet without really giving the kind of guidance that you usually expect from the court to lower courts and litigants as to how to interpret why it's making the decisions that it is.
Okay, and to be clear, like we said, this is a stay on a federal court, a lower court's injunction. This is not the final say on whether or not ICE can detain individuals solely based on the factors that we've discussed. So more to come on this issue. We'll have to leave it there for now with my guests, Kevin Fee and Jessica Estrada. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Up next, Mexican Independence Day events kick off this weekend. Our Joanna Hernandez chats with locals on what to expect.
Noticed Chicago looking a little more colorful this week as Mexican flags begin to pop up. Mexican Independence Day celebrations start this weekend with festivals and culture traditions kicking off in neighborhoods like Pilsen and Little Village. Despite concerns about federal immigration agents potentially targeting these events, festival organizers are proceeding as planned. They say they are prepared to respond if such situations arise. Joining us now with more on these events is Teresa Farga, Executive Director of the Mexican Culture Committee of Chicago, Leo Ortega, co-chair of Fiesta del Sol, an annual Latino culture festival, and on Zoom, Jennifer Aguilar, Executive Director of the Little Village Chamber of Commerce. Thank you all for joining us. So there's a lot to talk about. Teresa, I want to start with you. This year's Pilsen's annual Grito celebration is being held at St. Paul Catholic Church. Why would you say it was so important to keep this event? I know we spoke about a couple weeks ago, we just saw the Pilsen Mexican Independence Day. There wasn't a lot of people as usual. Why was it important to keep this event?
Well, Pilsen is an immigrant community, and the Mexican immigrant, as our family, has been there for many years now, since the 60s. And it's a sense of... it's like it's not an option. It's not an option to cancel an event that is so so important to the Mexican community. There's a saying, wherever there's a Mexican in the world, there will be a grito. And so it was quite, to keep it going, we had to move from Harrison Park because it's a huge site, uncontrollable. Then we moved to a closer area in the community, El Zócalo. But then we were invited by St. Paul Church. And it is an awesome site because right off the street where El Grito will be held, where the festivities will be held, is the main entrance of the church. And then right next to it, it's a beautiful garden, and it has a patio, and it's beautiful. It looks colonial, and we could have had it there also, but it would have been a smaller crowd, and we'd have to be prepared because it's an open area.
Of course.
So it is safer. It's a sacred space.
And there's significance to it. If we know the history of El Grito, right?
Right.
To have it at a church.
And actually, the surprise is, well, no longer, is that the church bell, instead of using a bell on the stage, we will have the church bell from St. Paul will be rung.
That's really beautiful.
Right before the ceremony.
Jennifer, I want to bring you in. Your group has been heavily involved in organizing the annual Mexican Independence Day Parade. We know that brings thousands of people. Tell me a little bit also as well as, you know, why was it also important? How did you guys decide that you needed to keep this parade going?
Yes, it was a very important and difficult decision for us to make. It took us several days to really decide what we were going to do. But for us, it was very important to have conversations with our community partners, our residents, our business owners, our community organizations to get a feel of how they felt, because we do the event right here in the heart of the community and it affects everybody. So we really wanted to make sure that we got their opinion, and we got overwhelming support from the community in favor of continuing and moving forward with the parade.
And what was that message that they were telling you?
They said that this isn't the time to bow down and to hide, even though we are afraid and our communities are being targeted. More than ever, it's important to hold our parade. This is the 54th annual celebration, and it's a tradition that has been here long, long before this administration. And it is important for us to not retreat in fear and to move forward. It's almost an act of resistance as a community to move forward with the parade.
Are you taking any other safety measures during the parade?
Yes, we're taking safety very seriously. We're working with the Chicago Police Department as well as a privately funded security team. We're working with ICER and New Life Centers with rapid response teams on the ground. And we will have attorneys as well present to be ready to respond in case anything happens.
And Leo, what have you been hearing from the community about their concerns, especially, of course, of potential ICE operations?
Most importantly, I think it's just a miscommunication of what's happening. One day a policy passes where he's not allowed to do so, then the next week he's allowed to do so. So I think it's just informing the community of where we're at exactly today, what the resources are available, and how to kind of be able to digest all that information. You know, there's a lot of misinformation that happens between, you know, social media and just outdated information. So just keeping everybody with in the community just on the same page.
What's that message that you tell them? Because you're right. There's a lot of information that we see through social media.
Education is the most important thing. Stay up to date. Go to reliable resources. Pilsen Neighbors Community Council does an amazing job, you know, really pushing out that information. They're associated with a lot of nonprofits, professionals, schools, local businesses, and all that information together, you know, being able to digest it and being able to amplify it to everybody, it's a good thing to have.
And I want to bring a bit of history. This is not the first time these celebrations have been targeted by immigration officials. Teresa, we were talking about it, that federal agents also arrested people around Mexican Independence Day back in the 50s during Operation Wetback, and you were sharing that you were deported when you were young.
I was 9 years old. My father and I were picking cotton, and that was 1951, and we were deported. Left my mother behind with 10-month-old twins and 2 months away from delivering my sister. And she didn't know where. We just didn't come back from work. And I was 9 years old. My father, it was standing room only in that huge flatbed truck, and my father just touched my shoulder, my knee. And he said, it's only you and I. You have no mother, you have no brothers.
You have been a pillar of your community ever since. Do you feel like this is why it's important for people to come out and celebrate?
I'm the president of El Comité Cultural Mexicano de Chicago. We've been around for 11 years. This is the 11th year. And I just feel something inside of me saying, no, you can't back off. But one of the, in organizing in Pilsen, we learned that it takes 5 years, a long time, to get a high school built. And so when you get started, you don't back off. And so, but I think it's also the frustration that what else can we do? Because we see what's going on, how our people are being mistreated, and we feel powerless. And the only power we have is to stand up at the time that it's important.
Yeah. Leo, what are your thoughts on what she's saying?
She's absolutely right. I mean, right now, we've gone through the struggle. We've been blessed. And I think it's right now to pay it forward to everybody that helped us when we were younger, at, you know, our parents. I think it's now that we are, you know, the ones that have been born here, we are professionals. I think it's time for us to really step up and really kind of pay it forward to, you know, to our local community.
And Jennifer, we only have a couple seconds, but I want to quickly talk about the theme of the parade this year. It's pride and power, our strength, our legacy. You know, what is your message to the community?
My message to the community is to not bow down your heads, to not step down. This is our moment to speak up and to show up for our communities. And come and celebrate with us this Sunday if you feel safe to do so. If not, celebrate with us from home.
Well, thank you. Thank you for all of you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Up next, an exciting new venture launching tomorrow. Brandis Freeman has the details right after this.
Before we go tonight, we wanted to tell you about an exciting new adventure we're embarking on here at WTTW News. Starting tomorrow, we're launching a new weekly email newsletter called Urban Nature, created just for you. Our WTTW News reporter, Patty Wetley, will be your guide as we explore the Chicago area's natural wonders, local wildlife, environmental news, and much more. You can sign up today at WTTW.com/newsletter. And that's our show for this Thursday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Freedman. Thank you for watching.